Please turn your Bibles to John chapter 2. Next week, Jonathan Lucas is going to be preaching for us, so we're very excited about that. Can't wait to hear what he has cooked up. My grandfather, Byron C. Davis, I was named after my mom's father. He lived in South Georgia. Married to Beatrice Davis, and had four children, Phyllis being the oldest, but not too old. Ruth, Jim, and Kay were the other children, and he was a Methodist preacher. And so I come from a long line of preachers, and he was just a great guy. I loved the man. I loved my grandfather, Papa. Loved him. True story, when he would preach on Sunday nights and we were in town, see what they used to do is they used to come to church on Sunday morning, then you'd go home and get lunch and hang out, take a nap, and then you come back and have church for Sunday night. So we're sparing you of that. But back in the day, that's the way they used to roll. And so when we were in town and he'd be preaching on Sunday nights, he would pick me up in his arms when I was two or three. And one night he was up there preaching and I started talking. I said, when the show starts, put your money in the plate. That is a true story. And my grandfather just, he loved me. I always felt like I was his favorite. And the things that I remember about him was, I remember his laugh. When he would get tickled, and that's what happens in the South, is you get tickled. When he would get tickled, it was just, oh man, it's just so good to hear that. I remember the way he walked. He always had a pistol on his hip. He would kind of walk. Bring it. I got this covered. Remember his walk. I remember he used to wear one of those fedora hats, kind of the short brim. But he would put a feather in his hat just because he had a little style. I loved the man. And the thing I remember was I would take his hat and I would smell. And that was Papa's scent. That was his aroma. That was what he smelled like. And it just was the most secure love, just all this stuff. See, when you love someone, what you love about him is you love their personality, is really what it is. Like a couple weeks ago when we buried Mark, we didn't talk about what he looked like. We talked about who he was. We talked about what he did. We talked about his little idiosyncrasies. We talked about the things that made him him. And when you meet somebody, originally, it's like what we fall in love with is not their occupation. It's not their bank account. It's not any of that stuff. We fall in love with their personality. Have you ever met somebody that when you first met them, it was like, man, they are great looking. But then as you started hanging out a little bit, you got to know their personality a little bit. It was kind of like, not so much. See, I think the opposite is true, too. You meet somebody first and you're kind of like, hey, okay. But then as you get to know their personality and the personality and the beauty of their inner self really starts coming through, then they get better looking. It's amazing. That's how I got Kim. And see, I think that's the way Jesus was. The Bible tells us, Isaiah 53, verse 2, he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. See, I don't think Jesus was like, wow, he's a looker. But I think it was like, once you got to know him, his personality, his inner self, really shine through, and it just made men and women want to follow him for their whole lives. God is the creator of personality. God is the one that creates it. That little idiosyncrasy, that little funny high-pitched giggle you get when you really get tickled. That's from God. God created that. God put that in you. It's your signature. It's unique to you. God created personality. There's a lot of personalities. Charles Barkley is a personality. I mean, he's just a trip. He's a card. He's a character. He's got so much personality. Chris Farley, so much personality. Oprah has a huge personality. She's very attractive. You know, there's just something about her. And it's like God does that. So when God becomes a man, is it reasonable to think that God became a man and had no personality? I don't think so. I think Jesus had a big personality. And I think it was that personality that shone through, even though there was nothing in him physically to attract us or any majesty to draw us to him, that personality shone through in an amazing way. But we don't see Jesus that way. We don't see Jesus with a big personality. We see Jesus as kind of this one-dimensional, you know, kind of superhero spiritual guy. Hello, mortals, I am Captain Righteous. I'm here to serve. You know, it's like, and we have a one-dimensional, and we like Jesus in the same way we like Batman. It's just kind of one-dimensional. But Jesus wasn't one-dimensional. Jesus was 3D, 4D, 6D. He had so much depth to him. And so the trick for us is to learn about his real personality. The best thing that can happen to you today is if you fall in love with Jesus. That's the best thing that could ever happen to you. And the only way it's going to happen is if you get to know his personality. And he's not a one-dimensional guy. There are so many layers. And I want us to look at some of the things that we can fall in love with Jesus about. John chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. At the wedding in Cana. And this is early on in his ministry. Actually, it's on the third day of his ministry after he's baptized. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied, "My time has not yet come." His mother said to his servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He didn't realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "You know, everybody brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." This, the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed in Cana of Galilee, he thus revealed his glory and his disciples put their faith in him. So, you know, they're in Cana, they're in a small town, and Jesus' mother gets invited to the wedding. And so they said, "Why don't you bring Jesus too as your plus one?" And so Jesus gets invited to the wedding, and the disciples get invited to the wedding. So they're all at the wedding, and they're in Cana, and it's a small town. And you know, there's a lot of great things about growing up in a small town. You know, there's a lot of great things. I mean, you know, if you need something, your neighbors are going to be right there. And there's a real sense of community in a small town. But there's some really bad things about growing up in a small town too. It's like everybody knows your business. Everybody knows what's happening. Everybody knows. And you're in a small town. And here's the definition of a small town. A small town doesn't have McDonald's. A small town has Arby's. Small town doesn't have a Subway. It has a Blimpies. So that's how you know how the food chains determine if it's a big town or small town. See, neighbors know your business. Everybody knows your business. Small towns are great, but there's problems there. And the worst thing in the world that can happen in a small town is if you do something wrong and you get a reputation. And it's like all you have to do is make one mistake in your life and you're always the guy who. You're always the woman who. And this family was about to become that raggedy family that ran out of wine at the wedding. And they were going to be known for that for the rest of time. And the bride was going to be known for that. So she goes to Dad, "Dad, we got to do something. We're out of wine." So somebody gets to Mary, Jesus' mother, and she says, "You know, they ran out of wine." And Jesus says, "You know, hey, that's none of my business. Why are you involving me?" He says, "My time's not yet come. It's not time for me to reveal my glory." She tells the servants, "Just do whatever he says." That's a real mother move. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but just do whatever he says. So Jesus tells his servants, there's, you know, six big jars, fill those up with water, and then draw some out and take it to the wedding planner, the master of the banquet. So, you know, a couple things we learn here about Jesus. Six 30-gallon jars are filled with water. 180 gallons of wine are produced by Jesus. Now, to give us a perspective, I read this in a book that some guy wrote. It's a really great point. That's the equivalent of 908 bottles of wine. 76 cases of wine. It's a lot of wine. So what does that tell us about Jesus' personality? We're trying to figure out Jesus' personality. He could have just, you know, done one. He could have just done a little bit of wine. He goes full on 900 bottles of wine. What do you learn about Jesus from that? Number one, Jesus is extravagant. Jesus is extravagant. I go to a party, I take a bottle of wine. Jesus goes to a party, he takes 908 bottles, 76 cases. Okay, boys, bring them in here, you know, and they're just like, 76 cases of wine. Jesus is extravagant. The word extravagant in Latin, and we've got Neil David here, he always keeps me, extra means outside, and the other part of the word, extravagance, is for the word we use now for vagrant, a wanderer. So extravagant means outside wanderer. Somebody who wanders outside the lines. That's extravagance. That's exorbitant. That's excessive. That's nowhere near reasonable. That's how Jesus was. Jesus was extravagant. And think about how extravagant Jesus has been with you in your life. I mean, Jesus just been extra for you. And I'm talking about every one of us in here. I'm talking about everybody that, you know, is like, we don't want to be in your shoes. Jesus has still been extravagant to you. You think about the people in your life. You don't just have a spouse. You have a loving husband. You have a loving wife. Are they perfect? No. But God has been extravagant. He put that spouse in your life. Your kids, your friends, your family. God put those people in your life. And they like you. And they love you. And the only problem they have with you is that they want to spend more time with you. I mean, think about that. We have people that love us. God has been very extravagant with us. Think about where you live. It's extravagant. It's over the top. It's nowhere near as, you know, you just don't deserve all this. Think about what you drive. It's extravagant. Think about the clothes you wear. It's extravagant. God has given you so much. Think about the food you eat. It could be just bread and water, but it's not. It's way more. It's filet mignon. It's omelets. It's béarnaise sauce. It's like he just went crazy. You know, think about our midweek this past Wednesday night. I was up here in the afternoon about 3, and Jim was back in the kitchen sweating. I said, what's up, Jim? What you got going? He says, I have to make pasta for 150 people. I wouldn't even know where to begin to make pasta for 150 people. So he makes dinner. He makes spaghetti, the spaghetti sauce, and he puts meatballs in it. He puts sausage in it. He puts short ribs in the sauce. It was amazing. He made a garlic paste for people that like garlic. He made a bolognese sauce. That in any of one of these meals, if you went to the finest Italian restaurant in town, you would say, that's a good meal. That's the kind of quality it was. It was just amazing. It was excessive. He was wandering way outside the lines of reasonableness. It was amazing. That's the way God is in our lives. Think about your job. Your job is extravagant. God just went extra with you. You have a job. You have something that you like to do. And there's a part of us that really enjoys our jobs. I know we gripe about them and complain them all the time, but doggone it, they're interesting. You know, there's just something about them. And maybe it's not that interesting, except that you can get money from it. But that's very interesting to us. You know, I remember when I got out of the ministry and I went into real estate, I went from the Great Commission to Straight Commission. That was my thing. But I remember walking out of the house in the morning, and I walked out like a jungle cat, just ready to find prey. Because I thought, today's the day that I can make that $1 million sale. And so I was so fired up about it. Now, I had a pit in my stomach. I'm getting a pit in my stomach thinking about it right now because it was scary. But isn't that what a predator has in their stomach? They're growling. They're hungry. They're looking for something to eat. And I knew that today could be the day when I meet the guy who owns thousands of units of apartments in this town, and he's going to let me sell the air conditioners from each one, and I'm going to make millions from it. This is the day we're going to kill that mastodon, and our village will eat for 3 months. There's that feeling of accomplishment, and that we like jobs. God is extravagant. He gives us jobs that we can excel at and that we can achieve at and that we can receive good things from. God is extravagant with us. It's crazy. But, you know, you think about it, it's like, it makes sense because God's rich. God's rich, and I'm his boy. You're my boy, Blue. I'm God's boy, and so it's no wonder that he takes care of me and is super extravagant. He's rich. My parents have been so extravagant with me, with patience and kindness and money and everything. And I try to be that way for my kids. I want them to feel like, man, Dad is just the most generous guy in the world. Mom is so generous, because that's the way I feel about God. You know, God, it tells us in Ephesians 2, God made us alive when we were dead. God has seated us in the heavenly realms with Christ Jesus. God has shown us the incomparable riches of his grace. You know, God is rich, and he treats us like we're rich. I heard the other day Warren Buffett's only going to give a small percentage of his wealth to his kids. And it was like, you know, man, what a cheap guy. But even a small percentage of his wealth is still billions, you know, come on. And that's the way God is. God is extra with us. Jesus is extravagant. That's one of the things about his personality that you can really learn to love. He's also excellent. Jesus does things excellently. We know people that do things and it's just, man, it's done right. That's the way Jesus was. Jesus made the wine, and the guy, you know, they go to the wedding planner and say, you know, I got to hand it to you. This wine that you're putting out, usually they put out the good stuff first, and everybody, after everybody gets hammered, then they put out the cheap stuff. But you're coming on strong at the very end. You're bringing out the very best wine. Remember when Trader Joe's first got started, and they had this thing about, oh, they have a bottle of wine over there, it's $3, and it's amazing. I went to somebody's house one night, and they tried to serve me that, I almost spit it out. Was nasty. It was a $3 bottle of wine. They're probably still hawking it over there right now, but it's nasty. There's a difference between good wine and bad wine. Went to a restaurant, a nice restaurant in St. Louis one time with Bob and Barb, and we were sitting down. We ordered a bottle of wine for dinner. It was like a $17 bottle of wine that they mark up to $25 or something. So the sommelier comes out, you know, and he's the guy who's all about the wine. He's opening it up, you know, really cool. And then he looks at the label. He's, oh! He says, well, I have just made a significant mistake that you are going to benefit from. This is not the bottle of wine that you ordered, but this is the bottle of wine that you ordered that you're going to receive for $30. It was a $175 bottle of wine. They poured that wine, and you could taste the difference. It was good wine versus Trader Joe's. Jesus brings out the $175 bottle. Jesus was excellent. Jesus also enjoyed a party. Can I think about that? This is God. This is the Son of God in the flesh. He enjoyed a party. He wanted to see people enjoy themselves. He wanted to enjoy himself. There's nothing wrong with enjoying a party. Party on, Wayne. Party on, Jesus. You know, Jesus was not ultra serious all the time. Now, he had plenty of times where he was very serious. I'm on my way to Jerusalem. There I'm going to give my life. I mean, he was very serious, but there also was that part of his personality where he liked to party. He liked to have fun. You know, some of us are spiritual drama queens. It's always drama. Always something going on. Always something bad happening. I'm a wretch. You ever use that word about yourself? I'm just a wretch. That's weird. Now, I know it's a scriptural, yeah, but it's like, you know, the attitude is, I'm a wretch. I'm a sinner in the hands of a vengeful God, and God is going to punish me, and I need to really work hard so that I can be good enough to earn God's love. That stinks. That is the wrong attitude to have. And I don't think Jesus had that attitude. Jesus liked to party. He doesn't want us to be spiritual drama queens all the time because it's weird and off-putting. It just is when people are talking like that. And you say, well, Steve, you know, you're just saying that because you're superficial and surfacey. And maybe that's true, but I think I'm having a better time of it than you are if you're the drama queen. I'm going to tell you this. I watched The Bachelor. I watched The Bachelor. That's right, I said it. The Bachelor is amazing. It's hilarious. There's some weird stuff in it. There's some promiscuity in it. But there's promiscuity in the world. There's also some real morality in The Bachelor. There are people that say, I'm a virgin, and I'm okay with that, and I want you to be okay with that. So they have discussions about it. It's like The Bachelor is an entertaining television program. Steve, are you sure that you should be saying this and telling people you want? Let me help you out. I would much rather be a part of a church where people are watching The Bachelor than I would be a part of a church where people are getting down on people who watch The Bachelor. I just got a head shake back here. Amen. Can I get a witness? You know, do you see the difference? It's like, if you're the kind of person that's like, oh, well, she went to an R-rated movie, that's so wrong, or you watch The Bachelor, you start judging people, just understand, Jesus didn't mind a party. Jesus didn't mind a party, and people were drunk at that party. Because he's saying, you know, hey, usually people wait till everybody's had too much to drink, and then they, but you did it right now. Jesus was okay. Now, Jesus was serious, but Jesus also, just see that part of his personality. Kim's over there like, stop, no more, stop, go to the next point. Dang it. I just got too much stuff. Not too much stuff. Okay, point two is out the window. Okay, Jesus was human just like you and me. Now, he also was 100% divine, unlike you and I. But life affected Jesus. Life moved him. In John chapter 4, when he was at with the woman at the well in Samaria, says he was tired from his journey and he was thirsty. This is Jesus. This is the one we're trying to fall in love with. We're learning his personality. He was a real person. He was tired. You ever get tired? Yes. You ever get thirsty? Yes. Jesus was tired. Jesus was thirsty. Matthew 4 said he had fasted for 40 days and he was hungry. And I put that up for understatement of the Bible right there. He was hungry after not eating for 40 days and 40 nights. Matthew chapter 26, in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before his crucifixion, when he knew what was coming down, he knew he was going to die that next day. He knew he was going to be tortured to death. And he was upset. It says he was overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. And he called his disciples. They were the 12 or the 11 were with him by then. Judas had left. But he called in the three, Peter, James, and John. He says, hey, stay with me here and pray. I need you guys. Yes. Of course, they promptly fell asleep, which is what we do. But he was overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. That's Jesus. That's personality. He was overwhelmed with sorrow. He's like, oh my goodness, this flesh that I'm in, these nerve endings are just going to be ravaged tomorrow. I don't want to do this. Father, if there's any way, put this away from me. But whatever your will is, that's what I'm willing to do. The best thing in the world for you today would be if you could fall in love with Jesus. You are not going to fall in love with the Batman Jesus. You're just not. That's not a real relationship. But if you get in your book, you get in your scriptures, and you start seeing this was a real person. He got tired. He got hungry. He got thirsty. He was sad. He was overwhelmed with sadness to the point of dying. when you start realizing that's who he was, then you can fall in love with Jesus. He was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another obscure village where he worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never went to college. He never visited a big city. He never traveled more than 200 miles from the place where he was born. He did none of the things usually associated with greatness. He had no credentials but himself. He was only 33 when his friends ran away. One of them denied him. He was turned over to his enemies and went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While dying, his executioners gambled for his clothing, the only property he had on earth. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. 19 centuries have come and gone, and today Jesus is the central figure of the human race and the leader of mankind's progress. All the armies that have ever marched, all the navies that have ever sailed, all the parliaments that have ever sat, all the kings that have ever reigned put together have not affected the life of mankind on earth as powerfully as that one solitary life. Thank you.